Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Well, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today, we have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, Business Insider made a soup sandwich of a video about military terms, and it is fucked up beyond all recognition. Round number two, there is pure comedy in Yemen as a squawking bird wreaks havoc on ISIS fighters trying to record a very serious video for their propaganda machine. Round number three, in 2012, Marine Major Jason Bezler was discharged from the Marine Corps for sending urgent info over an unclassified email. This week, that story is back in the news, and we're going to tell you why. Round number four, an interview with Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard that ended with a little bit of controversy. We're going to talk about that interview and the situation that surrounded what happened, which I alluded to on Twitter, and people were going wild about it, and we're going to tell you why. Round number five, Austin Tice's story. It's the 7-year anniversary that he's been captured in Syria. We're going to talk about that a little bit as well. All of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Starbucks. They have hired 25,000 military veterans and their spouses. They've adopted over 1,000 units. They've given out 3 million cups of coffee. They're opening up 65 military family stores with plans to open much, much more. They're doing things on the military level that no other Fortune 500 company has, but for some reason, because the stupid meme went viral a couple years ago, people think it's gospel. It's not gospel. What is gospel is that they hire 25,000 military veterans and their spouses, so clearly they love the troops. Crazy day. We talked a little bit about it on the Chaps and Kate show. I have to spend another $1,000 on my truck. Sometimes I just want to dump my truck with Kate's truck. But we should put your vehicle in the back of my truck and put them both in the river.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like any kind of people are like, are you talking about committing fraud on radio? Yes, I am. So if you have a great way for me to get rid of my car, right now the three options are set it on fire in a parking lot, roll it into Jamaica Bay in Queens, or three, just leave the keys in it and put it in a neighborhood somewhere and just let it be taken.
Kate, I got a guy. All right, don't worry about
okay.
it. I got a guy.
I don't think you'd be in trouble for any of those, because I don't think you can get in trouble for arson of your own stuff if you don't try to claim insurance. Two, you might get in trouble for the Jamaica Bay thing, because I think that's considered littering. I'll tell them I'm starting anew.
I'm starting a new coral reef, and that's
a stretch.
First,
okay,
right.
Yeah,
no,
right.
Everyone knows the Honda CRV creates a gorgeous, gorgeous coral reef.
Just put some woke stickers on the back. You'll be fine.
I will. Coexist, fam. Right into the damn bay.
So. Wait, Chaps, what's wrong with your vehicle?
The shocks are messed up. I mean, my truck is older. It's like a 2004.
Right, knew that, yeah.
So some things just need to get replaced from time to time, and it's one of those times.
Huh?
And because it's an F-250, it's expensive unless you know how to do it yourself, and I am not a full-blown man, so I do not know how to do it.
Well, geez, I mean, I don't know that many average guys know how to change shocks, do they?
I don't think so.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I can change.
No, you don't.
I can change oil, I can change a tire, and I think that's about it.
Oh, change a tire.
Yeah,
what
that's
a flex.
It. And, I mean, I did look it up on YouTube, but there's no way I'm going to do that. Because if I say I did it 95% of the way,
oh yeah,
the 5% that I didn't do it correct would cause massive damage that I'd probably have to pay way more for.
Right.
Otherwise,
oh, yeah.
we'll
right.
just go pay for it the first time.
Let me tell you. Go ahead. What was your point?
Well, my point's not car related, but
oh,
real quick.
I was going to make another car point. Just real quick. You have my promise. My promise to you, too. And you know what? To the listeners, I will never buy a car. I'm straight leases.
There you go.
That way you get a new car every few years. You never have problems. Easy peasy.
Lease it up. My promise to the listeners is that I'll always buy one with a single check that's falling apart and about 10 years old. And then I'll let the insurance lapse on it. Anyways, I was going to say it's amazing the tutorials. You're talking about the truck tutorials you can find to do to fix up your stuff. I wrote this blog the other day. There's a man going around this town, Henrico, Virginia, who's leaving. He's left about 100 old-ass televisions, like the big
I saw
thick
that.
Boys.
Yeah.
And he does it in the middle of the night. He drives around with a truck full of old TVs. he wears an all-black leotard, and then he puts a TV on his head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his head is inside the TV, and then he sneaks up to people's houses.
That dude's going to get shot.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
He sneaks up to people's houses holding another TV, gently leaves it on their patio, and then runs back to his car with his
TV
head.
Well, he turns to the one – well, he turns to, like, the Nest or the Ring camera on people's door and, like, waves.
Right.
Dude, if I saw that, I'm tackling that guy.
Well, so I'm like, what a weird – it's the middle of the night. You run upon a TV. How many people are putting their heads in TVs? They'll be able to figure out who this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
I went on YouTube. There are a million tutorials. It's like an anime Comic-Con thing. People love putting their heads in TVs,
you know,
and
I
wearing leotards. It's like they're like, here's how to gut your TV to put your head in it. It's like 50 of them.
I don't think this is anything like the video, but I think the song Video Killed the Radio Star should be playing on all those videos.
Absolutely. If your head's in a TV, that's the song you want.
Video Killed the Radio Star.
Off the rails already, guys. Friday episode.
I honest to God don't know what just happened. I do not know what just happened.
It's Friday.
Likewise, with round number one, there's a video that came out with Business Insider. This is round number one. Business Insider is, they constantly have like little clips that they put together, kind of that they just aggregate from other media companies. And mm-hmm. I think that's what happened here. Usually they take it from like the Marine Times or something like that because they have like partnerships through media. But they did one that made zero sense. Kate, you want to explain what happened with it?
Yeah. On their Twitter, they posted this little video. And it's popular. You see on Instagram and Twitter, major media sites will post these quick little videos where they'll just take photos. And it's almost like a slideshow that explains things. And people love them.
A lot of them are interesting.
People watch a ton of them. Right. So Business Insider did one like, here's some popular military terms that you might want to know just for fun, blah, blah, blah. And so the slideshow had five terms that we use all the time apparently in the military, and watching it I didn't recognize a couple of them. I was like, what the hell, nobody says this. But it said they were the five most common terms. So the first one, squared away, and basically the wording was like, having it together, being organized and neat and clean.
Okay.
The next one, did you guys ever use this term, wake up?
Yes. So I actually heard this one even before I got into the military. I had a coach in high school when we'd be working out during the summer. He'd come into the weight room and just start screaming, 18 days in a wake up. And that was 18 days. And then the next day you wake up, that's when camp would start. So he would just start counting us down every day we were in the weight room.
Well, they say it's the last day of a service member's deployment, and I've never heard of it in that regard.
So in that context, it would be, okay, I have 32 days in a wake up, meaning 32 days, and then the next day that I wake up, I'm going home.
I just feel like,
but it certainly is not a deployment related term. Like, I wouldn't, what's a wake up, I wouldn't say, oh, this has to do with a deployment. It could do anything, training.
Correct.
Hey, guys,
correct.
You have 13 days and a wake up left. Like, that's a very common phrase, but referring to it just as a deployment thing is not true.
Is weird.
Correct.
This one I got, no impact, no idea. So it's a shooter so far off target that nobody knows where it went. They're like, we have no idea where that hit. No impact, no idea. They can't see where it impacted, and so they have no clue where it went. And then
so
you
I
could use
had
it.
That when I was in artillery school, so you learn how to shoot gunnery, but then you also learn how to be a forward observer. And the first time you go out and do a live fire, you have to obviously watch where the round impacts. And the very first time I was out there calling for fire, I made the mistake of looking through my binoculars right away, as opposed to just keeping my eyes out on the impact area to see where it was and then pulling up my binoculars. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to curse here, but the round impacted it. I'm looking through my binoculars. I didn't see it, and I'm starting to sweat. And then finally, I looked over the instructor, and I said, sir, I got no fucking idea where that landed.
Yeah, no impact, no idea. And that's, you can also say it for, like, if your gunny runs into your room screaming at 3 a.m., and then when he leaves, you look at your bunkmate or whatever, you're like, no impact, no idea. No idea why the fuck that just happened.
I used to love it whenever the range coaches are, like, the person on the tower, whenever somebody would shoot it and, like, 14, like, 14, get that target down, 14, 14, get that target down, and then the target would go down on 14, and they would come up and they'd wave the little lollipop in front of it, like, 14, no impact, no idea.
Oh, yeah. They like, were so...
And the entire range knows that you completely missed, like, the 8-foot by 8-foot target.
Yep.
Those guys had such a great sense of humor, the range callers. They definitely would roast the shit out of people who couldn't
get
shoot.
Get that target up high in the sky, 14, get that target up high in the sky, no impact, no idea.
No idea. Soup sandwich. I know, Cons, you said this was one for you. I'd never heard anybody say it when I was in, but you said
soup
sandwich.
Yeah, you're like a soup sandwich. You've never heard soup sandwich?
I did
not. You're all jacked up. It's like you come out with your uniform just all disheveled, Jesus, man, you're looking like a damn soup sandwich today.
Ah.
Soup sandwich means...
Stolen Valor, Kate strikes again.
Yep.
I took it very literally. I thought it was when the chow hall ran out of food and they literally just dipped bread in soup. And we're like, here you go.
Well, what would happen if you actually put soup on a sandwich? You can't make a soup sandwich, meaning it's all jacked up.
I could find a way.
Yeah, you could.
And then this last one I thought was, this is what made us even talk about this, was this last one. I was like, nobody says this ever. Blues Buddies. Two Marines that go off base in their official uniforms. And they put on Business Insider's little video, they put a slideshow photo of two airmen instead of Marines wearing blues. Whatever their blues are. But two Marines that nobody's ever like, heading out with my blues buddy. Whoa. Like, nobody.
Like, battle buddy, yes. But blues buddy.
Blues never buddy.
Everybody makes no sense.
I never heard it. Ever heard
closest
that.
Closest thing I've ever heard was Blues Brothers, with the famed movie with John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd. And also, I'd like to welcome the NYPD to the podcast episode.
Yes,
thank you very much.
The sirens are blaring. They got a couple
our
blues
angels
buddies
in blue there.
Rolling by outside.
Should be the last one, according to P. We're getting them soundproof. Don't worry.
Allegedly. But, I mean... Those are all good, but I think we should have gone with a few more that everybody knows.
Like what, though?
Devil Hog. Like, what? It's a big old fat military working dog.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Just wants to look out for, like, begging strips and shit like that.
Devil Hog, yes. That, oh, Lord, here it come. It's a big-ass military working dog. Everybody says that. Green on Brown was a common one for us, or Gob, we called it, when you got to use your skivvy shirt or socks to wipe your ass in the field. Mm-hmm. So, like, my buddies were gobbing on deployment, man. Their moms had to keep sending them new socks.
Mm-hmm. We say that a little bit as a joke, but it was always very funny whenever you would have a Marine whenever you're out in the field. And, like, if you do, like, let's say McMac training or something like that, say, okay, go ahead and drop your blouses, and everybody would take off their top. And they would put them onto the side, and there'd be one Marine standing there with this skivvy shirt that doesn't have, like, an arm on it. Like, so there's no arm sleeve. You're like, Devil Dog, what the fuck is your problem?
Like, I feel like...
I didn't have any more paper towels or any more tissue from my MRE, so I had to cut off my shirt with my K-bar
or the
Gerber.
For sure, everybody in the military knows somebody. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like 6 degrees of somebody who had to rip their sleeves off to wipe.
I don't even think it would be that much. It'd probably be like 2 degrees
probably
at most.
2 degrees of you had to wipe your ass with some form of clothing on your body at some point while you were in the military.
What about
and you think you go at top of your sock.
Yeah, that would definitely be easier, I think, and obviously not noticeable.
Yeah. Guys, the FDMY
gotten into
now
the mix
here. Now we
got
some Reds buddies coming through. We got the Blues buddies earlier. Now we got the Reds buddies in the background of the podcast.
Love it, man. FDNY, NYPD, shout to them. They're the best. What about what about Sideliners? You heard Sideliners?
No, I never heard that one.
It's just people who go out into the Army and just tell everyone they played Army football. You guys wouldn't know. You weren't good enough to play college
football. No, Sideliners are the people who didn't play Army football.
Fuck, I messed
God
up
damn
your joke,
it. Kate. I made up all these terms. There's no gobs or devil hogs or sideliners. I made them up.
We appreciate that, though.
I was hoping we could trick listeners so some boot goes in and it's like, you guys gobbing?
Maybe
it's not
real.
I'll tell you what,
one thing, a new one.
We're good at a lot of things on this show. One thing that we're not good at is acting. We are terrible actors.
No, we're terrible.
That's
absolutely
why
horrible.
I love scripting it out because I feel like
I
it's
know.
So painful.
Every time Kate's like, don't worry, guys, I got the sheet. I'm like, what play is she going to write this week?
We have she's got a big screenplay for us. Act
you
one,
can't see it, but
two.
I'm pointing at them. I'm like, go, go, go.
She doesn't share it before. She didn't share it like until like an hour before we started recording.
And
she's afraid we're going to change
like,
everything.
Sideliners, what the fuck? But she's got the whole screenplay, like fade in. A dark podcast room.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say, Kate, the last one that you did that you had on there was one for me. It was called Recoil. And Cons was supposed to say, like, when your rifle goes into your shoulder. And I was supposed to reply, no, at Squimquaw, when the pool is cold and your dick recoils into your body.
Pulling back the curtain, letting everybody see how we're working here.
How that ZBT sausage is a made, and it is not spicy. Oh, my God.
All right, let's move on to round number two. Cons, you want to introduce this one? Or Kate, did you want to?
Yeah, let Kate, because she
Cause
did
I also
a whole
wrote a
damn
little...
deep dive and wrote a whole play worth of
I
words.
I did. No, listen, across the military, there's a lot of things we have in common. any country in the world, boots are going to boot. People are going to be taking mirror selfies. There's going to be screw-ups, negligent discharges, all sorts of stuff from every military in the world. And another thing that is in common is there's bloopers. People fuck up no matter what. And even if you want to be a big, tough Navy SEAL, I'm sure there's videos of a guy tripping and rolling down a mountain and LOL, everybody's laughing. Mm-hmm. Well, let's head out to Yemen where ISIS had a bit of a wacky thing themselves. Sometimes comedy just writes itself.
Let's head out to
Yemen, where everyone knows is the comedy capital of the world.
Somebody just called in from Yemen. Let's go out to the phone lines. We got Ryan on the phone from Yemen. Ryan, what's going on?
Yes, this
Chandler
is Yemen.
Calling from Yemen?
Yeah. Hello, Yemen speaking.
By the way, that was a Friends reference that you wouldn't get, Kate.
Right, because that show's garbage. Anyways, again, sometimes comedy just writes itself. This 30-second video that I saw, a reporter posted it on Twitter yesterday, and it's just a quick 30-second video, and it's one of those videos where there's two ISIS guys. They're sitting on a Persian rug out in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in Yemen.
It looks like a lovely scene for a picnic, honestly.
It does. Beautiful trees in the background. They're clearly in a forested area. It's a nice day out. These two ISIS guys, and they have like the scarves wrapped around their faces, and they have the little like vests on and with like pistols and stuff and all that, whatever. So first, the one guy, he's an ISIS leader. He's supposed to be like pledging his allegiance to ISIS in this propaganda video. So these two guys sitting on the rug trying to look really tough. And first he forgets. The video starts, he forgets. He's like, hold on a second. And he has to reach in his pocket, read it again. He puts it back in his pocket. He's like, my bad. Okay, I'm ready. He starts reading the allegiance, and then this happens. You know what? Just play the clip.
Yalla. Jahazin.
Ana an nafsi bidin la jahaz.
Yalla, wahid, thnain.
Alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam.
Oid. Oid min jadid.
Alhamdulillah, wahida. Alhamdulillah, wahida. Wa salatu wa salam ala nabiyina Muhammadin wa
man la nabiy.
حرك يدك
بالله
عليك اذا نسيت
نبي بعده
خليك هادئ
There's the bird again.
That's a really good impression, Kate.
Thank
well
you.
Well done.
So every time this ISIS guy went to do his allegiance thing for the video, almost immediately, as soon as he started talking, this bird nearby would start squawking so loud. And I don't know if you heard at the very end, the camera guy finally, the camera guy's mad at the bird, and he's also mad at the ISIS guy because those pauses you hear mm-hmm. are him reading the notes again. He keeps forgetting what he has to say. And at the very mm-hmm. end, in audible English, you hear the camera guy go, idiots. He just says he's so frustrated, and it sounds like Pinky in the Brain
yeah.
when Brain's like, you idiot. Yes. He's like so frustrated. But the whole thing, every time he went to start, the bird would start squawking, and it just felt like something out of like a Monty Python sketch to me. And the
what
video,
animal do you think would be even better if it would have interrupted him? Like whenever you're trying to have this speech where it's like, ooh, we're going to destroy the infidel, we're going to make an Islamic state, we're going to do all this normal thing. Have a walrus, your random
right in the middle of Yemen.
Walrus in Yemen.
Yep,
the large walrus population.
Yeah. I was thinking.
That's an elephant.
I was thinking just
that's an elephant.
Okay, what else you got? Keep it going.
Who let those dogs out?
Oh, the devil hog.
The yes. devil hog. That's a chonker. That's
a chonker. I was thinking if you just had like a tiny little white and black kitten just go up into his lap. It was like.
Yeah. Any one of those things interrupting an ISIS fighter is great. And you can see, too, the guy sitting next to him on the rug has a scarf wrapped around his face. You can only see his eyes. And at first, he's glaring into the camera. And by the end, he's looking down at the ground. He's just like, he can't even look at the camera. He's so embarrassed that this keeps happening. So win one for the birds. And you can hear them talking, too, that I was reading people's tweets underneath it. And they're like, should we go? Should we, like, I don't know what language they're saying, but they're like, should we go get rid of this bird? Like, somebody chase this fucking bird away. It's driving us nuts. But yeah, so that's always a treat to see a little ISIS blooper video and know that they're just fucking up.
The lighter side. The lighter side of ISIS.
Oh, the just ISIS goofing. The little goofballs.
Just a couple wackadoodles in Yemen.
Indeed.
Just hanging out.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to round number three, which is going to be brought to you by our friends at Rob Rodney. Rob Rodney is a it's a little weed case, right? Kate, you have one.
It's not necessarily a weed case. It's if you are a friend of cannabis and you transport it, there are these beautiful leather bags, and they come already with the different little jars and all the stuff inside for you to transport it. TSA approved. They have mine has two locks on it, and you get to design them yourselves. They have ones that you can pick from, but if you have specific needs and you know how you like to set your stuff up, you can go in there and you design the bag for yourself. And they're also friends with the Veterans Cannabis Project, which is working to get legislators to change their minds on veterans having access to cannabis. So a percentage of every sale this month goes to the Veterans Cannabis Project, which I really love. But yeah, my case
is
beautiful.
And the bag started at just $99 too. And they passed the leather smell test, which I think is one of the better smells. Like, fresh leather smells unbelievably good. What's better for you, fresh leather or fresh garden hose?
I'm still going the leather bag, because this one is gorgeous and it smells really good.
Ask cons. Leather bag or fresh beach ball?
Oh, wow. Does the beach ball have remnants of the beach, or it's just the beach ball fresh out of the bag?
It's straight out of the package.
All right, then I'm going leather.
All right. Yeah. $99, you can get that fresh leather smell. Keep your cannabis or whatever you want to keep locked up and secure. And there, you can get that at robrodney.com/ZBT. You're going to get 10% off with the promo code ZBT10. That's the promo code ZBT10. Make sure you get that. All right, let's move on to round number three. All right, round number three. We're going to get into a little bit of real talk. Sometimes we goof, sometimes we script play, sometimes we talk about different issues that are big. But this is a real issue of what happens, because we all know, all three of us have combat experience. We all have been deployed. We've all done that stuff. So you occasionally, whenever you're deployed, sometimes more so if you're in a position like Connor as an officer, you'll have classified information that you come across. Now, it's your responsibility as a military service member to know what's classified and not classified. So whenever you're calling your family, telling them how you're doing, or even to the point of where you're at in the world, sometimes you have to keep that information quiet. Now, whenever you have information that's classified, you're even more restricted on what can be said. And there's a difference between sensitive, classified, and it just goes on and on and up the chain. Even if it's just something that's sensitive, that's not necessarily classified, you still have to keep that under the vest just for OPSEC reason, operational security reasons. Now, imagine knowing that. Imagine knowing that you wouldn't technically breaking any rules if you give away something that's sensitive because it's not classified. But you know that your family or people that you had worked with in the past are in danger and maybe even imminent danger. What would you do? And that's kind of the background of the story, what happened here. Right, Kate?
Right. So back in July of 2012, there was about 20,000 Marines in southern Afghanistan. And by the way, this comes to us from Dan Lamothe, who we've had on the show before. He's a reporter at the Washington Post. And so Marine Major Jason Bresler is back in the United States. He finished his deployment. He's back home. And there's a big withdrawal of U.S. forces underway, but the battlefield's still pretty ugly. So he comes back. There's a group that's replaced him where he was at in Afghanistan in Helmand Province. And he gets a request. Marines in Afghanistan want to know about Sarwar John, a police chief that Bresler helped to push out of power. And that chief was in the Nowzad district, and he reportedly worked with the Taliban. He was known to sexually abuse children. He was a very bad guy. So Major Bresler was part of a group that said, this guy's no good. Get him the fuck out of here. He was like a worked very closely with the troops. He said, no, he's gone. So they helped get rid of him. Well, suddenly the chief was back, and he was in charge of Gamsher province. So the Marines were reaching out to him, and they were wondering, hey, is this guy bad news? Like, we get this bad vibe. You were here before. What's the deal with him? So Bresler, right away, his alarm goes off in his head, and he's back home in the States. He's moving on with his life. He's like, oh, shit. He uses his Yahoo email account to fire off a warning to the Marines that were overseas worried about Sarwar John. And then he reports it to his commanders because he realizes he sent classified information over his Yahoo email, an unclassified server. So sending info about this probably very likely Taliban guy over a Yahoo account. But he owned up to it. He said what happened. And then a couple weeks later, and nothing was done about it. He sends off this warning. They do nothing. He's like, this is bad. They do nothing. A couple weeks later, the worst possible thing happens. A servant of Sarwar John takes a rifle and opens fire on unarmed Marines while they're just in their little gym area of a FOB. They're just working out, and one of Sarwar John's little underlings takes fire and kills them. It kills Lance Corporal Gregory Buckley, Staff Sergeant Scott Dickinson, and Corporal Richard Rivera, and a fourth Marine was shot five times but survives. Afterwards, the shooter tells others, I just did jihad. And he basically was inspired by this terrible guy that Breslau tried to warn them about. So, and this was, do you remember at this time, a ton of insider attacks were happening. Mm-hmm. There was a lot mm-hmm. of cases of Afghan police and yeah. Afghan army guys opening fire and who were in cahoots with the Taliban, much like the Sarwar John guy was. So, for obvious reasons, U.S. troops and families of the fallen were fucking infuriated. And at some point, Breslau now is in huge trouble, though. Mm-hmm. Even though these Marines were killed, and it turns out he was right about this guy, he's in huge trouble. And even though he owned up to it for sending this warning over the Yahoo account. So they're trying to discharge him now from the Marine Corps. And he's like, no, I feel like I did the right thing. I'm going to stand up for myself. So he reached out to his congressman of his home state because they had given him an adverse fitness report for sending this warning. So eventually word gets to the Marine Corps Times and a bunch of other people that, yes.
And let me explain that, what an adverse fitness report is. We'll do this yeah. to somebody. If you get an adverse fitness report for a Marine staff NCO or for an officer, your career is over, essentially.
Right.
Like, especially in an officer on a deployment, yeah. a deployed adverse fitness report is a career ender.
Yeah, and it definitely pretty much they were screwing him over. So, yes, he did spill classified information, but reporters were like, there's got to be more to this story. So Dan, who's been on the show, he writes for the Marine Corps Times, which he also noted in his thread, that story is gone now. The Marine Corps Times has taken it down from the site for some reason. Yeah. And Commandant General Amos was cited in the story, all these other things. Less than a week after the publication of that story, the Corps brings Breslau to a board of inquiry. So that's like an administrative proceeding where they review whether or not somebody should be kicked out. The story gains steam. And at this point, Breslau, so he had come home from deployment. He was reserves. And now he's FDNY. So it gets a ton of press in New York City. They're trying to kick out this FDNY firefighter out of the Marine Corps because he tried to save fellow Marines was the narrative there. So Marine Corps generals are talking behind the scenes. They're split. So officers like General John Kelly and General Larry Nicholson, they want to know why Breslau should be tossed out. And then on the other hand, like General Mills, they say there's more to the story and that the case is not fair. The case is being tried in the press. And here's what the more to the story is. First, I have to ask you guys a question. And people out there listening who have deployed and stuff, certain photos on within your FOB and on your base can be considered classified. Mm. Certain reports, but at the same time, I was taking all my reports that were classified from my first deployment. They didn't give me a camera. I had to use my own personal camera. And I was using my own personal thumb drives. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'm supposed to be saying that, but like I wasn't given the tools, so I was using my own. And then
that's an issue across the military, is that right. A lot of times whenever you get these tasks, but you're not given the equipment to complete the task, and it's just like anything else. It's Semper Gumpy. You got to figure it out. Like you have to figure out a way to accomplish the mission in whatever way, whatever means to do that. That's the way that you have to do it. That's the way that we go about it. If you had a camera sitting on your desk and you told your staff sergeant, I don't have a camera from the platoon that was given to me and checked out by the CO, they would tell you to go fucking eat a dick. Like, right. Use your own camera.
Yeah. Right. And my reports, I had to go out and take photos of certain things and write certain things and then send these reports up. But I kept them all on, you know, the internet over there. It's a whole long, I won't get into it. But I took all those things home with me. I didn't even think twice about it. It wasn't like I'm stealing all the info. It was like, deployment ended and I was home and I'm going through my box of stuff. And I'm like, oh shit, I have all this stuff still from my deployment that... But I didn't really think much of it at the time till after I got out and started going back through things again a little bit. So
Katie War Crime.
I have a question. if I'm reading and understanding this correctly, when he sent the email, he no longer had access to a secure network. That's correct. He only had his Yahoo email account, and that's why he sent it via that account.
Right, and I don't know if like he could have gone to his nearest reserve base and told them or whatever, but like also you know how the red tape works and whatever.
Sure.
I feel like if I was him, I would have done the same fucking thing. I would have immediately just wanted to let them know this guy fucking sucks and here's why. But Anyway, Sawarjan, not Breslar. So basically, and look how long. This happened in 2012, and it took years. They finally try him and everything, but a part came out during the trial while they were trying to figure out whether he should get kicked out or not, or the inquiry, that he had saved some of this information because he was going to write a book, maybe. So
therein lies the rub.
It's a little bit, it was just kind of an interesting thing. And I'm looking.
But I don't know if you can blame a guy for doing that, too. Like, I don't know if whenever you're going and you find a loophole in the system that's really fucked up about the reporting process, I don't know if you can blame him for wanting to get that story out.
Well, here's the probe turned up. So they do a probe on him. They turned up a folder with some 106 documents marked secret. Breslar said he had inadvertently brought them back following his 2010 deployment to Nowzat, Afghanistan. And I did the same thing. 2010 Marja, I accidentally, like, I wasn't thinking. I brought back a ton of stuff. And where limited resources sometimes meant Marines had to work on their personal computers and thumb drives. But then looking into it, they said that he was thinking about writing a book about it, had saved a couple things. He wanted to write a book like The Rebirth of Apocalypse Now, Zad, was a paragraph from the Sawarjan document in his manuscript. So they said he's feigning ignorance by saying he did this by mistake. He did it on purpose. He used the Sawarjan information in his manuscript without realizing, without, you know, saying it was classified and all this stuff. But again,
so here's what's going to hurt this gentleman, and the fact that he's a major, right? He can't just say, oh, I didn't know. It doesn't work. Once you get past a certain point, pretty much anyone, I would say above 02, if you're an 03 or above, you're just going to be told you should have known better. So that whole I didn't know, that's not a good defense that's going to hold water.
Well, that's what they ended up deciding. So this happened in 2012. In 2013, he appeared before the Board of Inquiry. The panel of officers did decide he needed to be cut loose and discharged. They told him, you're gone. And Hope Sec, who we talk about sometimes, she's a fantastic reporter. She spoke to him, and he said his reaction to send the classified info, though, was visceral. He said, as soon as they asked me, there was, and he still would do it the same way again. He would still warn them the same way again. And he was right. I mean, look what happened. So the recommendation held up, but then he sued, alleging he was brought onto it because he had reached out to reporters. And he's saying the Marine Corps was pissed at me because I went public with the information to reporters to try and help get my story safe so that they take away my bad fit rep and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So he's saying the Marine Corps is trying to retaliate. Well, finally, they have flipped it.
Which is very much like the Marine Corps. Like,
20?
Yeah.
Yeah. So finally, it's back in the news. The panel of officers have come to a different conclusion. Just last week, three colonels unanimously recommended that he be retained while acknowledging he made mistakes along the way. So sorry, that's like a long saga, kind of a long story. But this 2012, this terrible incident happens. Years later, they give him the boot. And now they're bringing him back in. He's allowed to be a Marine again. He's still a firefighter here in Brooklyn, by the way. But he is now allowed to be a Marine. And I just think it's such a crazy story. And there's other cases like that, too. Remember, was it a Marine or soldier who was like, this Afghan police is like abusing kids and stuff. And he ended up getting in trouble for trying to point it out. And I feel like these cases where, like you said, Chaps, when things go wrong, don't be afraid to fight. Like, fight the system, because it seems intimidating, whether you're like a small lance corporal or an officer or whatever. If you think you're right, fight.
Sure. You know, the thing that kind of confuses me a little bit too about this story, he sends this email, and a lot of times if you send an email to a then secured network, it won't even go through. It'll get kicked back. You can't receive emails. So for instance, I had two computers when I was in Iraq. I had my regular computer that was declassified. I had my Gmail
Nipper
on there.
Nipper and Sipper.
Nipper and Sipper, yes. Is the
old
the
Nipperoons.
The classified versus unclassified. And when I would be on my classified laptop, basically nothing worked. All I could do was basically email people within my brigade, and that was about it, and work on, you know, PowerPoints and such. But it's, I don't know. I think there's more information to this story that is not out there. I'd be interested to talk to this gentleman and maybe just get the real lowdown off the record, because it just doesn't, it's not adding up for me.
Sure, Collins will beat you for a beer tomorrow. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, I just thought it was an interesting story, and I'm glad that he fought for himself. I'm sorry for what happened to those Marines. I feel like, just a huge that this guy could get back in power, this Sawarjan guy, and that, you know, that this Marine's the one who ends up taking shit for it is insane to me. And I know we have to be strict with classified and unclassified, but I think sometimes the higher ups know, like any high, general looking at this should be like, you know what, that he did, he looked out for his Marines.
Right. That's not always black and white. You gotta use some discretion. So
and anyway. Chaps, now it's your time to shine in this episode for round four.
Yep. Let's move on to round number four. Round number four is brought to you by our friends at Killcliff. Killcliff was developed by U.S. Navy SEALs, and they were the originators of the functional beverage, so you can thank them for that. Killcliff performance drinks are made in America by Americans, by Americans. They contain elite hydration benefits, and they are 100% all-natural with a killer taste that can be found in thousands of retail locations all across the U.S., and now they're taking recovery to the next level with their Killcliff CBD. I actually just got one in the mail, and it was delicious. Killcliff is the first national brand to launch a sports performance drink and recovery drink that's infused with CBD. Their hemp-fused recovery drink is packed with 25 milligrams of full-spectrum CBD and a specialized vitamin and enzyme blend that will give you more cushion for the pushing. Do yourself a favor and crack open a can of Orange Kush to unlock the killer hydration and recovery benefits of a full-spectrum CBD. Their new CBD product is available exclusively online. Pre-sales are available now at Killcliff CBD at killcliffcbd.com. Get $10 off a 12-pack with the promo code ZEROBLOGCBD. Again, ZEROBLOGCBD is the promo code. You're going to get $10 off with free shipping at killcliffcbd.com. Make sure you go get that today. All right, I want to start this introduction to this interview by saying that Tulsi Gabbard was great. She was professional. She was well-spoken. She took charge of the information at hand and gave well-reasoned opinions on a wide variety of topics. We got along great during the interview, and we had some shared beliefs. That's why what happened after the interview was so surprising. Now, I don't like to toot ZBT's horn, but this isn't the first interview we've had with somebody like the Congresswoman. We've had several sitting members of Congress, White House staff members, generals, chiefs of staff, Medal of Honor recipients, and a national security director. We have never had an issue with the content during one of our issues. One of our interviews. We usually let people take back a joke if they think that they went too far or if they misspoke and want to correct, but we don't have to do that. When you're on the record, you're on the record. That's just how this fucking business works. I always tell the person that we're interviewing, we're about to start. Do you have any questions for me? If not, let's begin. Well, welcome to another edition of Zero Block 30. That's how I start damn near every single episode, every single interview, so that they know, because they are people in important position. That being said, Tulsi's campaign reached out to us starting in early July. Over the next few weeks, they reached out several times trying to get her on the show because they wanted some publicity. We are the largest military podcast, and they wanted her to come on the show. It makes sense. The schedules for us never really matched up, though. Tuesday night, I got an email from a staffer asking if she could come on before her deployment, which started, I thought, on Wednesday. It actually started on Monday, and she was pretty open about that on other news agencies like MSNBC. She was going to start a two-week active-duty stint and do a training mission in Indonesia. I agreed to do the interview under the parameters that we could talk about our military stuff and information that her staff had given me. We did just that. We asked about foreign policy questions under the umbrella of how her military service was shaped. She answered. That's where the problem started, I guess. They said that because she spoke about those issues, she could be in violation of Title 10, which essentially means that she has to abide by active duty rules and can't be political like she normally would in her role as a congresswoman or somebody running for president. The congresswoman knows those rules. Her staff knows those rules. They have been required to abide by those rules since she started Congress in 2012. That's 7 years. After the interview, the staff asked me to pull essentially 13 of the 20 minutes because they believed it was too political. They wanted just the introduction and the exit, which is ridiculous. ZBT is a business. We have ad reads. We have responsibility to our listeners to provide good content. We have responsibility to ourselves to make sure that we're doing the best job. And we bump somebody else to have her on the show. And it might be difficult to reschedule this person, but we did that knowing that Tulsi was running for president and this would probably be a bigger episode for us. If that were true and she was really concerned about the Title 10 violations, why did she continue to answer the questions that we had? Why continue it? Why didn't she just stop it? Further, why did they want her to do this interview while she was under orders? There was no rush. They could have gotten with us 2 weeks later if she wanted to, but the fact of the matter is that they need her to get enough push to get her into the next round of debates, and they wanted to have as much media coverage as they wanted to. Maybe after it was over, they looked back at it and said, this isn't exactly what we should be doing. This is a violation of Title 10. I do want to say that the things that Tulsi talked about on the issues are very important. Nobody's really talking about the sex trafficking or the slavery markets in Libya and Yemen. That's important. We have absolutely no hard feelings toward Tulsi or her staff. Well, maybe her staff a little bit. Anyway, here's the interview with National Guard Major and United States Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who is currently training in Indonesia on active duty orders and is also running for president of the United States. And because she is running for president of the United States, she has got to be responsible for her words and actions at all times. That includes interviews, because you are never off the record when you're on the record. Here's Tulsi Gabbard on the record. All right, now on Zero Block 30, we have another presidential candidate. Tulsi Gabbard, she is from Hawaii. She is a congresswoman currently serving in Hawaii, but she's also in the National Guard, and that's what brings her here. She is a major in the National Guard and getting ready to go on a training exercise to Indonesia. You're in Hawaii now. Are you excited about going on your training mission?
Yes, we'll be leaving early Thursday morning, and I'm looking forward to it.
I imagine that there's some sort of almost relief about going to do this after you've been in interviews and going to Iowa and New Hampshire and all over the place. There's got to be some relief. Like, I could put on some camis and just go hang out with normal people.
You know what I'm talking about. I told my husband, just putting on my uniform is like being home.
And I've going through your background, if we have some listeners who are not familiar with your background, there's a lot of firsts that you have accomplished. You're the first female combat veteran ever to run for the presidency, the first female combat veteran ever elected to Congress, along with my personal favorite politician in America, Tammy Duckworth.
There you That's go.
Amazing. You were a distinguished honor graduate, the first one at the academies in Alabama in 50-year history of that school. You were also the first woman who ever set foot in a military facility in Kuwait. What's next for you? How can you get your story out and what you're accomplishing and what you view for America?
Well, you know, it's really continuing to do what we're doing, and it's not so much about, you know, what I've done so much is bringing about the kind of change in leadership we need in our country, of putting service above self and putting the people and our country first. And when you look at all that is wrong with our country, you can trace it back to, you know, self-serving politicians who are looking out for their own political interests rather than the interests of the people, or, you know, the most wealthy and the most powerful who, once again, are buying influence, looking out for themselves rather than the people. And you see across every single, you know, section of our life, how that negatively impacts people of this country. So that's really those values that every one of us as service members have in our hearts, of putting service above self, is what drives me.
And you've done multiple deployments in your role with the National Guard. We had Seth Moulton on a few months ago, and he talked about how his experiences in the military shaped his foreign policy. Can you describe how your military experiences are shaping your policies?
9/11, for me, like so many people, was a pivotal moment that really changed the course of my life. It's what led me to enlist in the Army National Guard, and to volunteer to deploy with our brigade combat team in 2004. Just those experiences of, you know, in that first deployment in Iraq, 40 miles north of Baghdad in a field medical unit, and just seeing firsthand the heavy, heavy human cost of war and who pays the price and what the consequences are of the decisions that politicians are making in Washington. And they're so wildly out of touch with reality and the impacts of what happens when you go to war, and how many times throughout our country's past politicians have unnecessarily sent our brothers and sisters in uniform into combat on missions that do not serve the interests of our country, that are not about keeping the American people safe, and frankly dishonor the service and the sacrifice that our service members make. That changed me throughout the course of both of those deployments, the way that I view the world, the way that I viewed politicians in Washington, and really drove me first to run for Congress and then to run for president, to try to be that agent of change, to be a decision maker rather than to just be on the receiving end of the consequences of ill-informed or politicians who don't care.
And you were outside of Anaconda in 2004, right?
Yeah.
And whenever you were there,
we were actually based primarily in Anaconda. We had troops in four different areas in Iraq during that time. So that was where our medical company was based out of. And then, you know, I went down to Baghdad and a few other places a couple of times while I was there.
How old were you when you were there?
That was 2004. So I guess I was around, 24 or something like that.
Could you have imagined then in 2004 that we would still have troops on the ground now in Iraq?
God, no. No.
It's ridiculous. You know,
at that time, it was, when were you there? When
was I was your there, first trip over there? All of 2000, some of 2006 and all of 2007.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was during the height of the war. And I think all of us hoped that this would be something that would wrap up. You know, maybe in the next few years, I don't know, but certainly not as we stand here today, so many years later, where we still have troops dying in Iraq.
Yeah, I believe there was a report 2 days ago that an American service member died in Iraq just 2 days ago, and it happens all the time. And so whenever there is someone like yourself who has worn the uniform that's running for a major political office, even if it's Senate, Congress, or whatever, especially as the President of the United States, I always pay attention to words that they use. And I thought it was very interesting that you refer to yourself as sometimes as a hawk and sometimes as a dove. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Look, our mission and our goal is to keep the American people safe. And, you know, for terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda that pose a threat to our safety and security, I'm a hawk and got to defeat those threats. However, I'm a dove when it comes to the long-held, failed regime change / interventionist war policies that our country has had that have been so destructive, so costly on, our troops and our veterans, but also just on every single American. And this is something that's glossed over too often, and people, reporters especially, will say, gosh, Tulsi, you know, you talk about foreign policy all the time. What about all the other issues? And my point to them is you can't separate foreign policy from domestic policy, because every time you say, you know what, there's not enough money for, clean water in Flint, Michigan. There's not enough money for rehauling our broken infrastructure, not enough money for healthcare, not enough money for affordable housing, all these things. And yet they don't blink twice about sending trillions more dollars to go wage these counterproductive wars that, once again, they do not serve the interests of our country.
Are you familiar with the internet personality Drill?
No.
So Drill is this really funny character, and he has this tweet about maintaining his family's budget. And he says, I have a $3,600 a month budget that I'm going to go by. We're spending $450 on rent, $200 on car payment, $150 on insurance, $65 on food, and $1,800 on candles a month. How can I feed my family on this budget? Well, it's because obviously you're spending $1,800 on candles every month. Like, that's the issue. I feel like we have that issue in America too. We're spending so much money in one area. Let's even it out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is a good analogy that opens the door to the kind of examination we should have as a country is, what are we achieving by spending so much money in that one area? Because it'd be one thing if it wasn't candles, it'd be one thing if it was something that is essential to our basic necessities. But the fact that it is being spent in a way that does not increase our national security and that does not benefit the health and well-being and quality of life of our people, then we know that something is seriously wrong. I was at a conference with, it's like a national conference of mayors just recently. And, you know, mayors were talking about the tangible things, right? How do we get more funding for roads and sewers and water treatment plants and parks and police, like all the basic things that we know and appreciate in our communities. And I was just sharing with them that when we talk about the cost of war, it's hard to wrap your mind around, you know, over $6 trillion since 9/11. And what we talked about was
that's
how,
a fake number, right? Like,
all right, like how, like, I don't
you
even
can't, you can't, that's not a tangible number.
Exactly. And so when I told them that right now we are still spending $4 billion a month in Afghanistan alone, what to speak of what we're spending in, you know, Iraq and in other places, but $4 billion a month in Afghanistan right now. And they said, my God, there's a, to put this in context for them, there's a federal program that provides funding to cities and counties called the Community Development Block Grant. And every city and every county looks forward to this funding every year. They get $3 billion that they've got to split up annually amongst every city and county in the nation.
Wow.
So they get $3 billion a year as they figure out, all right, we're going to put it towards new fire trucks or new radios for the police officers or fix up this park. $3 billion sliced up into tiny little pieces across the country every year. And yet $4 billion taxpayer dollars are going to Afghanistan every month.
Ridiculous.
Every month.
Unbelievable. And I know whenever your story comes up, and I saw an interview with you, I think it was yesterday on MSNBC, where they talk about Syria. I think that anytime that your name has been brought up, like people try to throw what happened in Syria kind of back in your face a little bit. And for our listeners that don't know, if you'll allow me, I want to read an article from 2 years ago from The Guardian where they talked about this. They said Democrats were silent on Thursday as Tulsi Gabbard, one of the party's sitting lawmakers in Congress, announced that she had been with Bashar al-Assad during a trip to war-torn Syria and dismissed the entire opposition as terrorists. Gabbard, a Democratic congressman from Hawaii, disclosed her meeting with the Syrian president on Wednesday during what her office called the fact-finding mission. Democratic leaders were mum on the decision by one of their sitting lawmakers to meet with a dictator whom the U.S. government dubbed a war criminal for his use of chemical weapons. Gabbard's trip raised alarms over potential violation of the Logan Act, a federal statute barring unauthorized individuals from conferring with a foreign government involved in a dispute with the U.S., and the U.S. currently no longer has diplomatic relations with Syria. It goes on. And then one of our former guests, Adam Kinzinger, said that it's sad and a shame and a disgrace that she would go here. In no way should a member of Congress, should any government official ever travel to meet with a guy who has killed 500,000 people and killed 50,000 children. Kinzinger called on leadership in both parties to condemn Gabbard's trip and questioned how it was financed. But Kinzinger, like Gabbard, an Iraq war veteran, said he would need to know more on the file to file an ethics complaint. So he has the audacity to say what everywhere she went, people supported Assad. Of course, when you go on an Assad-led tour, he's only going to take you places where people like him. Now, in your interview with MSNBC, you said nobody really lets you ever speak on it and that they interrupt you. And even during the Democratic debates, there was 9 other people trying to interrupt you. If you could change anything 2 years later, would you change how you went about it or would you do it the same?
Oh, I mean, I've actually have spoken about this numerous times in the last 2.5, 3 years. But what you're seeing and what you're talking about are people and the media who are trying to distort the truth for whatever their own objectives are. Here's the bottom line. Bashar al-Assad is a brutal dictator. Saddam Hussein is a brutal dictator. Gaddafi in Libya is a brutal dictator. That does not mean that we as the United States should be continuing to go and be the world's police, topple these brutal dictators, wage regime change wars that take the lives of our brothers and sisters and that make our country less safe by strengthening terror groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda that continue to cost our people, our taxpayers, trillions of dollars, and that cause such devastation in the countries where we wage these wars. If you look at the aftermath of what we have done in each of these countries, Libya, for example, we went in and toppled Gaddafi because he's such a brutal dictator. Now the people in Libya today are living in a completely failed state. Men, women, children are being sold as slaves in open markets. Terrorist groups have a stronghold there that they didn't have before. This is the reality of what we're facing. And this is why both before I went to Syria and after I came back, I continue to fight very hard, even when it's politically unpopular, to make sure that I do all I can to prevent just another one of our brothers and sisters in uniform from being sent to fight and potentially lose their lives in these ridiculous, counterproductive, devastating wars.
And so in a Gabbard administration, where would your line be for, say, humanitarian violations? Where do you think America intervenes on just straight up humanitarian violations?
Well, it depends on what the consequences of our role or our action or proposed action might be. You know, we've got to ask these important questions about, you know, will our getting involved make things better or worse for our country? Will it increase, will it strengthen or weaken our national security? How will it impact our troops? How will it impact their readiness and capabilities to be able to conduct their missions? And will our action or involvement really result in helping the people who are dealing with a very difficult or terrible or humanitarian disaster? In the examples I've cited and so many more, you know, politicians say, well, we've got to go in. We've got to topple this brutal dictator. We have to get involved. We've got to send our troops in. But in each of these examples, we see how the lives of the people in these countries end up worse off than if we hadn't had gotten involved at all. And this is true of the Middle East. This is true of Central America, South America, our involvement there in the past. And I think the unfortunate thing is, as we see in Syria, for example, it's heartbreaking to see how people are suffering there. The reality is that when you look at this with clear eyes, if the United States is successful in toppling the Assad regime, the most powerful force on the ground is going to take over. And that's not the political opposition. It is the Al-Qaeda, ISIS-like terror groups, or those groups themselves, who have been and continue to be the most deadly fighting force and the most powerful force on the ground. So really what you're talking about is, okay, do you keep a brutal dictator? Do you end a regime change war with the intention of toppling a brutal dictator, or do you want Al-Qaeda? That's really the choice that's before us as a country.
And as essentially, would you describe yourself as an isolationist?
Absolutely not. And I think this is the problem with our country's foreign policy and how long it's been a failure, is that as soon as you talk about ending regime change wars and not continuing to act as the world's police, people automatically assume, well, you must be an isolationist and shut yourself off from the world. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is we need a foreign policy that will engage with other countries in a cooperative way rather than just through conflict, that we can actually be a force for good in the world, that provides us the opportunity to work out our differences with other countries through diplomatic means, while also therefore creating the space to cooperate on issues that we are concerned about, issues like climate change, for example. But if we're continuing to implement the world's police mentality of foreign policy we've had for so long, then we're not going to be able to solve the great challenges we face. And unfortunately, we will continue to see ourselves mired in unnecessary, costly, counterproductive wars.
And I think that your answer there is appropriate. And I think that that's what people should let you do in normal media, is like kind of explain what happens. And I hate the media approach of everything has to be an argument. That's why when we have somebody like yourself on, we give you the floor, let you talk, and it kind of explain yourself a little bit more. I think that's healthy. It's healthy whenever you're talking about who's going to be the next president of the United States. I think that's important. If you could change anything about the current debate culture, the current politicking for becoming president, what would you change?
Yeah, give us more time. You know, I would say, hey, let's, like, these questions you're asking and this topic of foreign policy in Syria and regime change wars is really, really important to us as a country. And it's a disservice to the American people that on a debate stage, you've got 60 seconds to answer a question about how to solve some of the greatest challenges we face. And I think having a longer form debate and forum to discuss issues like this is what really needs to happen as voters are being faced with this critical choice of who they want to be our commander in chief.
Now, if you and some of your other counterparts would like to, we could have a full-out ZBT debate where we bring everybody who wants to talk about foreign policy. We'll bring and have all the minds in the same room together. Let's go back to you're going to Indonesia to close out. What are you most looking forward to whenever your boots actually hit the ground there?
I love wearing the uniform and being able to spend time and with my with my buddies. We've been on, you know, most of us served on both of our deployments together in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, it's great to be back with them and to be able to go to Indonesia. I've actually been on a similar mission like this to Indonesia before, where we're conducting a joint training exercise with the Indonesian military. Mm-hmm. And having that kind of engagement and, you know, hearing from them and seeing things through their perspective, and also sharing, you know, our experience and what we bring to the table is always it's fun. It's great.
And we talked to some of the other congressmen that we've talked to who go on active duty orders. One of the things that they say that they really like is, for lack of a better word, they like the ball busting that happens. Is it almost a relief to be like, okay, not everybody's treating me like a congresswoman. Finally, I'm back in the uniform and we can realize
a little bit. Yeah. You know, there's no filters. Put it that way.
Well, Tulsi, thank you for your service and going and working in Indonesia for the next 2 weeks. And we look forward to seeing you back on the trail, and good luck to getting where do you need to be to get on the next debate stage? Do you know?
We've got to get three more polls. We've got to get three more qualifying polls in order to make sure we get on that stage. We've got the grassroots support and the donors. We've met that requirement that they've set, but we've got to, we've got to get three more polls to qualify.
There we go. Well, good luck to you. Thank you again for joining us on ZBT.
Boots on the Ground presented by Starbucks. I'm taking us back to last year when Chaps and I went on a journey across the U.S. visiting different military family stores. And we got to visit Starbucks HQ, where we met Nicole McNeil, and we made a couple fun latte arts with her. But she was a barista working at Starbucks just a few miles from Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And she did what Starbucks baristas do best, connected with local community, asked questions, reached out to new customers, and got to know the regulars, always going above and beyond. And when Nicole learned that an Army veteran, Vince Villano, was in need of a kidney donation and he was in failing health, she stepped up and told her husband Justin about it, and he ended up volunteering his own kidney without ever even meeting the man. Both men are also dads and Army veterans, so there's a connection there too. Nicole's husband, Justin, had just left the Army as a sergeant and was teaching English in the Army National Guard as well. And Villano had served 8 years in the Army before being discharged as a sergeant too. And he'd been an emergency medical tech, a man who was used to helping others who now needed it himself. But Nicole says Justin is the type of person who cares about anybody else without having to know anything. He's just kind. And so when he heard this guy needed a kidney, he stepped right up. The odds aren't great that a random stranger will do that for you or be an organ match in the first place. But when the test came back, he was as close a match as possible. So the transplant took place on Justin's birthday, December 26th, just last year. And now both Army veterans are recovering, doing amazingly. And Nicole is still crushing it over at that Starbucks. So an awesome story of the community that Starbucks military family stores and all those stores around the bases can create. And we connected with Nicole today and learned that Justin and Vince still doing great. They actually go to the gym and lift weights together regularly. Justin's even doing boxing and Muay Thai and competes in triathlons, much more than I do myself. So shout out to Nicole. It was awesome meeting her. You knew she was special when you met her, and it sounds like her and her husband both doing amazing things. That is our boots on the ground for today. Thank you, Starbucks.
We'll start with you, Kate.
Nothing crazy. I think this was going to be round five, but I think I'm just going to make it really quick. Austin Tice, August 14th marked 7 years since the American freelance journalist and Marine disappeared in Syria while he was reporting on the war. This week, Mark and Deborah Tice, his parents, penned a letter calling for people to take action. And he's been there since August of 2012. And a fellow Marine who was just trying to be a journalist, and he's been trapped. And I do the hashtag Free Austin Tice. If you can, reach out on social media, maybe reach out to people that you can in your local government and try and get the noise up again. But It's been 7 years.
Actually, let's do it this week. Next week, we'll do a deep dive on Austin Tyson and explain what happened. Because I think there's a lot of people out there. We haven't talked about it much on this podcast. Maybe not at all. Let's get into the story and let people know. We'll do that full deep dive next week.
Great.
Okay, we often see the memes on our own account when we're talking about, hey, you're at Friday formation. People are obviously listening to this on a Friday. And then, you know, the first sergeant gets done. And then, hey, sir, you got anything? And then he goes off on a tangent. Well, here's the thing. I have 5 saved rounds, okay? But I won't...
Just that alone made me want to die.
I'm triggered.
But I'm only going to talk about 2 of them.
Okay.
Okay? I'm going to leave
Unless
3 of them out.
Unless you can speed talk, like...
No. I'll leave 3 of them out, and I'll take them offline. Number one, in the news about your Philadelphia Eagles, Kate, Brett Toth, the offensive lineman from Army, current second lieutenant... They might give him a waiver early. President Trump talked about giving the waiver to academy athletes to go play professional. He is going and trying to get a waiver right now because the Eagles want to sign him to a contract.
Bye, Army, bye.
So we'll see what happens. I wish the best to Toth because he was actually a very, very talented kid.
Yeah.
And then lastly, earlier this week, Bren got hit by a car. He was looking for some sympathy out there. Hmm. Bren, when I was in college, I got hit by a car. All right? And I couldn't tell anybody about it because I was somewhere that I wasn't supposed to be. So if I told anyone, if I went to the police, I would have gotten into a shit ton of trouble. So I got hit by a car and I had to just eat it like a man.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear, I got hit by a car. You're here walking.
I mean, I would hate for your leadership to find out you were somewhere that you weren't supposed to be. That sounds like a you problem, not a me problem.
Damn integrity con strikes again.
Chaps and I got hit by cars when we were kids and we still walked 5 miles to the store. In the freezing cold.
So that's all I got. Enjoy your weekend, everyone, as you listen. Chaps?
I got nothing. Been a crazy week. Thanks to Representative Gabbard for coming on the show again.
All right, you know what? I'll bring back my other 3 rounds real quick.
Oh my God.
Chaps, what are you doing buying a putter on eBay? A putter's something you need to feel. You can't just be buying putters on eBay. What are you doing?
Buddy, there's always a method to my madness. I'm sitting right behind a Newport 2 that's brand new right now, sitting that was delivered to my door this morning. Method to the madness.
All right, fair enough. Chaps hating mac and cheese is ridiculous when he just absolutely enjoys spaghetti. That's just a ridiculous statement. And finally, there was a couple in my mentions on Twitter who were considering getting married at Army-Navy and having me officiate.
They are not considering it.
He's considering it.
She is not considering it at all.
I married Kevin and John last night at the live KFC radio show.
Love it.
Officiated their union.
I love it, as you should. So you got practice. I'll be the maid of honor.
Perfect. That's all I got now, for real. You guys can all... Sergeant Chaps, please dismiss him for me.
Demote me too. It's on the retreat.